recording earlier today. It's not as early as last time, but I'm still rather tired. I got up kind of late today and went to bed kind of late last night, but
what were you doing
just
last night?
Last night I was working on some Java homework and ripping some CDs.
Just ripping CDs.
Just ripping
as
CDs.
As always.
Yeah, man. I got some good ones yesterday. Actually, my Java class was canceled yesterday afternoon, or early morning, which means that I have an even longer break than normal. I've got two classes in the morning. They're back to back. And then I have usually like it's like a 2 to 3 hour break between my second and my third class. And it's usually long enough to get some work done, maybe finish some homework, scroll around Twitter for a little while. But then I go to class. But the other day, my Java class canceled. He never does that. I've never known that teacher to be out, so it's kind of strange. But that gave me an extra hour and a half, or hour and 50 minutes or so, on my normal break time. And I honestly had no idea what to do. I considered just going home. But I don't want to like miss out on really easy attendance credit for my afternoon class, as boring as it is. So I went for a walk, and I went to the comic store, and I found some cool comics. And then I went to find the record store that I've often heard about but never visited, and I found that. And I found some really cool foreign and bootleg CDs that I'd never heard of before.
So, from bands that you'd heard of?
Yeah, like I got, he had a really interesting collection of Coldplay CDs. There were, you know, your standard albums, but he also had a bunch of, like, UK promo discs from early on in their career. So I actually picked up a copy of, I think it would technically be their first or second EP, the Brothers and Sisters EP, and then I got a copy of their, one of their singles that was put out around the same time. So almost everything that he had was actually prior to the Parachutes release, which is really interesting. It was kind of a cool collection of discs. So I grabbed two of those, and then I got a very strange Jeff Buckley bootleg that I'd never heard of before.
I saw you post the cover of that album on Twitter.
Yeah, it looks terrible, right?
It looks like something printed out from like a Windows 95 PC on yeah. The same era printer.
Yeah, what I actually didn't notice and couldn't, well, I did notice it, but I couldn't post it at the time because the disc was trying to rip. It actually failed. I couldn't actually properly rip the disc on my first
Late 90s DRM, right?
Yeah. It's just really bad CDR. But on the front of the disc itself, they misspelled Jeff Buckley's last name. It's pretty bad all around, but it's cool because the audio, even though it sounds pretty terrible, is the only known audio from his Phantom solo tour, which he took after, I think it was maybe just around the time when Grace came out. And, you know, he was like, all of a sudden, this is a very big name who just a few months prior, he was just playing coffee shops, and that's kind of how he always did it. And then he became this big name in music, and he could no longer just do the coffee shops under the Jeff Buckley name. So he did a whole tour where he'd just go to coffee shops and he'd be billed as just random names. And one of the names was Father Demo, and that's what they titled this disc. And it's the only known recording from that tour. And it's really interesting. I'd never heard it before, but it's cool to hear now.
Does it have a location on it? Like, where was this one recorded?
It was actually recorded in Buffalo, New York at Spot Coffee.
That makes sense how it made its way to you, because that's not too far from where you are.
Yeah. I want to do some more reading on that whole Phantom tour, because it's really interesting. I found, like, a list of the names, but I haven't found, like, a full list of all of the venues that he allegedly or was purported to have played.
Does that venue still exist, the coffee place in Buffalo?
That's a good question. Let's see. Spot Coffee. Buffalo.
I'm thinking you could call up and ask to speak to the person there who's been working the longest.
I don't know.
And see if they were there for that.
There is a place called Spot Coffee. They have franchising information, though, so I'm not quite sure this is the same thing.
Hmm.
Could be. They could have grown since then.
I mean, it's been what, 20 years?
Yeah. Yeah, 96. It was recorded in December of 96.
So it's been 23 years. Almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just give you a list of these aliases, because I don't know if he came up with these, or if, you know, whoever was booking the tour, like, if they came up with these. Let's see.
Seymour Butts.
Buckley returned to playing live concerts when on his Phantom solo tour of cafes in the Northeast in December of 96, he appeared under a series of aliases: The Crackobats, Possessed by Elves, Father Demo, Smack Robotic, The Half Speeds, Crick Club, Topless America,
Mike
Martha,
Rotch.
And the Nicotines. Mike Rotch was my Dungeons and Dragons name.
You're terrible.
I'm not kidding. And a puppet show named Julio. So yeah, he just did the string of tours, and man, what an interesting thing to do.
Imagine catching that. Would you even known what you were looking at the time? Probably not.
Would I? No, I was three.
No, I don't mean you. I mean, like, the hypothetical person in their 20s that's just frequenting coffee shops on Wednesday nights or whenever these shows were. You know, just just a casual person stopping in for a drink to these places would, you know, that'd be so weird to just catch Jeff Buckley there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, years later, you'd be like, yeah, I saw that guy when he was playing under a fake name.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really cool. I don't know, would that be more interesting? That would be cooler than saying, like, oh, I knew him before Grace, right? Because that's sort of like, okay, yeah, well, that's based on circumstance, probably, not so much your savvy. But if you were to catch him later on...
It's a cooler story.
It would be a cooler story, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, just... any musician, you know, being able to catch them I mean, like, people would pay probably hundreds of dollars to see him in a bigger venue, or like,
yeah,
I mean, or like, yeah. At the time they were probably paying, like, you know, $20 a pop to see him.
Yeah, I'm sure he's pulling in a big venue some good cash,
but like, they probably only had to pay $5, or like, maybe it was a free entry that night and they just had to buy drinks or something, and they just got to see Jeff Buckley play.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. Like, man, I don't even know what I do. Like, I've been to shows where, you know, a musician or a comedian who wasn't on the bill will appear. And that's always like a super special treat, because you've already paid for your ticket and now you're just getting extra show. But to just maybe go down to the coffee shop, because that's what you do most evenings anyway, and just be sitting there, and then from the corner you hear Jeff Buckley's voice singing Lover, You Should Have Come Over, man, that would be an incredible, incredible experience. He's on my short list of those musicians, you know, for that question that I always get from my uncle on vacation every summer. Every year he asks me,
if you could see one musician living and dead, who would it be? I don't know why I gave him that accent.
He's from Arkansas, so you weren't even close.
Yeah, no, not even close. I won't even offend anybody by trying to do my Arkansas accent, even though I did just watch True Detective season 3.
But no, he asks that question every year, and it changes. It's actually fun to think about that every year, because it's always, you know, it's always a different list. I usually have Jeff Buckley and Freddie Mercury on there, because those are two that I would just kill to see perform. But
wait, is that the question your uncle asks you? Who would you murder someone to see?
No, that's but I like to take it a step further.
Oh, okay, all right, you're pushing the envelope. Okay, I see.
Yeah,
what you're
actually,
doing.
I'm sorry. His question is actually, If you could see any musician living or dead, but you had to kill another musician to see them play, who
would
it be?
Wait, that's really his question?
No, but isn't that more interesting?
Who would you murder?
It's like a twist on Screw, Marry, Kill.
But wait, wouldn't you just kill a musician you hate?
Well, maybe.
So, like, if you wanted to see Jeff Buckley, what musician would you murder? Like, I don't know.
Trick,
like,
question. I would resurrect Jeff Buckley to watch him play, kill him so that I could see him again.
What are you saying right now? I don't even get it.
Theoretically, like, living or dead. If they're living, okay, you get to just see them. You know, it's like a, you know, in this hypothetical situation, if they're a living artist, you just get to see them play. If they're dead, you have to go through some more work. So you have to resurrect the guy, and it's probably just for one show because your powers aren't that strong. So You get to bring him back. You get to watch him play. Then you kill him, which in this new question scenario means you get to bring him back, right? I might be drunk. I don't know what I'm saying. There's meta layers to this new question.
It is 2 p.m. right now, Jacob.
I'm not drunk. But I can't breathe. That might have something to do with it. It's
Why can't you breathe?
Season.
Is it mold season still in your apartment downstairs?
No, I think that's taken care of.
I hope that's taken care of. You're just slowly going crazy.
It's early pollen season. It's the worst time of the year for me. It's tree pollen season.
It's bad here, yeah. The flowers are blooming on the trees and everything.
Nasty.
It's just the eternal question. Are you sick or is it just allergies? And I feel like a lot of people just blame it on allergies, but normally it's just me being sick.
I don't know. I either always have allergies or I've been sick for a very long time.
Like sick. Or like sick.
Yeah. Sick.
Nice. So I watched those alien movies that you recommended.
Oh cool, the 40th anniversary shorts.
The shorts, yeah, not the fan cuts that you mentioned in a previous episode.
Yeah, which I still haven't watched myself, but I'm kind of holding out because May and I are going to try to go see a 4K restoration of Alien.
You mentioned that,
at the end of the month. So I'm hoping that I can go watch those, and then maybe if she likes it enough, I can get her to watch Aliens and maybe Alien 3, and then we can go watch the prequels again.
I would love to hear May's take on all of the Alien films.
I have a strong feeling that she's not going to like the first one quite as much. She likes Star Wars, and from that angle, I think she might. But it's also, it's just very tense.
And I thought you guys liked horror movies, though.
No, she does not. She doesn't like any. She doesn't like movies that are particularly stressful, and horror movies fall into that camp. So it could be like a drama where, you know, the emotions run really high and the stakes are too high, I guess. I don't know. But I don't know what she's going to think about this movie. She would not go see Us with us.
I'm in that boat too. So you know what?
But that, I don't think that movie's really scary. She did not like. What was the movie before Glass?
Split?
Yes. Yeah, she saw Split. She hated that.
That was laughable, that movie.
No, it scared the hell out of her. It was too tense. It wasn't even him crawling on the walls or anything. It was like the girls being abducted. That was emotionally
that was
too much.
Very real. Yeah. I'll give him that.
Yeah, so
God,
I don't know. I don't know what she's gonna think.
Glass waiting right now in the wings to be watched.
Yeah.
I got Erin to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp because I've been trying to catch up on the Marvel movies before Endgame. Okay. And I got her to do that, and now I'm trying to push her to watch Glass. Mm. And I hate that I have to coerce her into watching bad movies with me.
Has she seen Unbreakable?
Probably. Yeah.
Oh, don't assume.
So.
Don't assume.
I know. Well, we
movie.
Watched Split, and she recognized. Well, I won't say any. Well, does it matter anymore? No, we did. We know
no,
Split because Glass. So it's right. Not. At this point, you have to spoil Split by saying Bruce Willis shows up at the end of Split because he's in a movie called Glass with the same characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, she recognized Bruce Willis at the end of Split. So therefore, I think she's seen Unbreakable.
Okay.
I think she watched it recently, actually.
Yeah. I didn't think it was a bad ending to that little story. It wasn't the best movie, but it tied things up okay.
Sure, I'll take it. Whatever.
It could have been a lot shorter.
That could be said for a lot of movies and podcasts, namely ours.
Yeah. That's true. Well, I look forward to hearing what you think about it. But anyway, these Alien 40th anniversary shorts, you watch the first two. At the time that we're recording, there's only two of them. They're coming out every Friday, so they're gonna keep rolling out. But I thought it would be cool to maybe talk about the first two and see what you thought, because you seemed
podcast is slowly
hesitant.
Morphing into an Alien show.
This episode sponsored by Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, LV, whatever your zip code is.
it's actually really close to the first planet.
Oh my god, really? It is, now I think about it. Okay, so the first one that came out, let's go in order of release. The first one that came out was that containment one.
Yes. Yeah, that was the first one. And
let's do
I just want to note, like, these are coming out so far. They've all come out on IGN. It's like an IGN exclusive. And I'm pissed off about it, man.
Yeah.
I'm heated.
Put it on iTunes, you know, for like a 99-cent download or something.
I think they plan to release them all in high definition without the stupid IGN watermark in the corner.
So gross.
But man, I'm ticked off because like IGN, of all of like the science fiction video game related properties that they could have partnered with for this, IGN gave Alien Isolation like a 5 point something when it came out. And then they changed their score, as they're known to do, to be slightly higher when everybody's like, what the hell are you talking about? This game is incredible. But still, it was a super low score. They said that it like wasn't tense, that everything that's great about the game, they completely missed for some reason. And then other people on their site contradicted their review like just a couple weeks later because the game was amazing and people knew it from the jump. Like everybody knew this game is super special and IGN just totally missed it. They just totally botched their review from the start. And then from there on, they've just been like trying to make nice on that. But even still, like why do they get the exclusive for the Alien Isolation digital series?
Does Fox own IGN?
I don't know. I mean, it's possible that there's some sort of nepotism going on there, but it's insane. They rate this game super poorly, lower than anybody else by like a spread of 20 plus points. And then they get the exclusive for the digital series based on the game, and then also these new shorts celebrating the 40th anniversary. I think it's crazy. Anyway, they're all coming out on IGN, so they've got the watermark, but otherwise they're... at least the second one was actually in 4K, which was pretty cool. I think I had the 4K version on my server. I don't know if you were able to stream it at that.
Yeah, I could not stream it at that. It dropped out like at the end of it. It was like the last minute of the second one, and it just dropped out, and I was like,
oh, no.
Right. I wasn't even playing in high quality. So the first one, Containment, plot recap real quick. Do you want to do a plot recap? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. They're on like a life
escape pod, life raft ship.
Yeah,
spaceship. We're talking space here.
And then, you know, xenomorph facehugger shenanigans.
All right. Anyway, so we're on a life raft, and there's three characters on this life raft: a young man, a young woman, and another young woman. There's a person in with like a breathing apparatus on that's also passed out. Tensions escalate. They're coming from the wreckage of like a scuttled, looks like a freighter or something like that, a colony ship. And the male in the situation is very paranoid and threatening towards the two women.
Game over, man.
Although I don't think he was threatening, paranoid. He was like very, very like cautious and everything. He was likable, Bill Paxton in Aliens.
Oh yeah.
But this guy is not likable. He looks downright mean. But he's seen some shit, though. So, as he says, we have a scientist character and what also looks like just a person and part of the crew. I don't know. Similar to whatever the dude is. The scientist character, she is pretty calm, saying she had to do what she had to do. The female character is tending to the man who's kind of like shooken up. And something about containment. I don't really know what's going on. But that's really it. And then man falls over, chest burster, and have a good day. You know?
Like, yeah. That's basically the whole thing. Like the one woman runs from the main area to what I guess is like the docking corridor. And she seals the door. And this is so stupid, but like the ship rocks. And then she falls onto the button, opening the door, separating her from the other three people and the chest burster, which, you know, it's like, okay, so the chest burster is going to be able to get out. So the last girl that's remaining, the coolest part of the whole short, which I thought was super mediocre, and a lot of like from an acting standpoint, just downright bad. The coolest part was at the end when she wrote like, do not enter or whatever. Do not open.
Do not open.
It went blood on the wall.
Yeah, I think that was pretty good. I mean, they're going to have to open it, probably.
not necessarily. They could just like eject,
scuttle
the thing,
it,
yeah, fall into space. Eventually, someone's going to probably come across and open it. And if we know anything about how small alien space is,
yeah, that's true. But, well, I mean, speaking broadly about these two films, they're 10 minutes each. Mm-hmm. Before we talk about the second one, Specimen, what was it?
Yep,
Specimen. They definitely have that amateur look to them. Like there's, like the first one, Containment, as soon as the guy started yelling, I was like, okay, enough. Like, I don't know why every student or amateur film has to involve a dude yelling fuck really loud, but like, it's the law of the land. Like, my friend works in production in LA, and whenever he's just ranting about like a bad thing, it's usually involving some, you know, 20-something-year-old person yelling fuck a lot during the scene. Writers just like to write it, and then people like to overact it. So it's just...
Yeah, there's a lot of overacting done in that one, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really notice. Like, it's just there's not a lot of subtlety, and there's not a lot of finesse in these ones. Second one has a little bit more, I'll say. But this first one was just, like, very stereotypical characters, you know, like crazy mad scientist deranged, can't understand the seriousness of the situation, is only obsessed by the beauty of their creation. Woman who has no idea what to do, and is essentially sacrificing herself, which is pretty much the spirit of all alien. And then crazy dude who's just too aggressive and shaken by everything and can't hold it together. The incapacitated guy, that guy's just stuck in there.
Yeah,
he'll wake up after it's like they're about to get scuttled again and just be like oh man. I did like the opening shot. I thought that was really impressive.
I thought it was almost perfect. It was almost perfect opening shot. I thought that the title card or like the location card was poorly done. I thought the timing of it was bad, and it looked really cheesy. If they would have just done something more simple with like even just Helvetica down in the left corner, it would have been totally
instead
cool.
of overlaying it over the shot.
Yeah, it was really distracting. So by the time that little animation is finished telling you information that's actually not super pertinent to the story, you miss the really cool part of that opening shot where that ship explodes.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like Kubrick-esque shot. I feel like, you know, just a distant spaceship against a planet.
Yeah,
and it looks like a freighter. Have we seen one of these before?
A shot like this?
Well, that
yes,
that
almost every
ship.
Star Wars movie.
Yeah, no, I don't mean no. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that ship specifically. Is that in the Alien series?
No, I mean it's probably just like some kind of colony ship that's been the trend.
But yeah, so it looks like you're just against this planet, and it just sort of falls apart.
And then you see like one ship like blasting off.
Yeah,
from it.
It's like, but it's so well done, and it's so subtle, and it's silent because it's outer space. There's no music, and it's just everything that follows is just so much more amateur, and it's like they put everything, every ounce of creative strength they had, they put into that. And then followed up with like a pretty generic.
Well, you know that shot was given to like one person who's pretty good at compositing, and then the rest of it is just based on bad acting and poor editing, really.
Well, I mean, beyond the look of it, though, just the idea that they had that it's like, oh, let's do like an establishing shot that everybody's used to, and then let's kind of twist it a little bit by having the ship silently explode, because that's how explosions are in space, they're silent. Yeah. And show that, and like they give you just so much, like that you like. Okay, here's a ship. It's near a planet. It's blowing up. There's something leaving it, and we have in 30 seconds. We've given you everything you need to know about this 10-minute short, as far as setting up the scene. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing else you need to know. Like, who's inside of this thing doesn't really matter at this point. So I mean, that was just awesome. And then what follows is just, you know,
it's bad. That's bad. It started good. The ending shot was. It was cool. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. It's like it's kind of a.
It didn't look as good though.
Didn't what?
It didn't look as good. Like it looked, you know, like three, like very, just use the word again, composited. You know, just like her, like superimposed on like a 3D render of the ship coming in and everything. Mm. It was a nice concept, but it's very dramatic. Which I don't know. The Alien series is very dramatic. I feel like they're just. I feel like Alien and Aliens, and I feel like it's very raw. Like. Probably Alien 3 is probably the most dramatic of them all, like the symbolism at the end, not the symbolism, but just like the sacrifice at the end of Alien 3 is like very like whatever.
I think they all have their own kind of drama. I think they all like differ in different ways. And from that respect, I wasn't pinging this thing for that. Like, okay, if they're going to have a dramatic bottle short, that's fine. My problem with it was that Containment was just an abridged retelling of every xenomorph adjacent experience that we've already seen. It's just distilling everything that we've already seen down to a 7-minute short in one room. And I didn't think that it was a great way to lead off this series because it didn't add anything new to the universe. And I'm not sure that any of the other ones will. But it also didn't add anything new to the viewer's experience. The people that are watching these shorts are Alien fans. Like we're capable of using the context of everything that we've already seen in the Alien universe and applying that to something new. But there was nothing new here. It was all just stuff that we've seen condensed into 7 minutes and some really bad dialogue.
Was there a Weyland Yutani logo on the scientist shirt? Do you remember that at all?
I don't recall.
I just wonder if they threw that kind of detail in there or something. Because, like, essentially they're just showing you that, like, somebody's, like, is engineering something.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, who blew it up? The male accuses somebody of blowing up the ship. Who blew it up? Was it the woman or the scientist woman?
It'll probably be the woman, right?
I don't know. Like, but the scientist wouldn't do something. She wouldn't kill it or terminate it or whatever. I forget. Whatever. It's fine. I just, the whole drama thing, it's just like, I don't remember like the dead eyes kind of like writing calmly. Like Alien has always been about humans panicking or showing immense bravery, but not like jaded kind of like writing on a window, like do not open backwards very calmly. You know, it's always been like turning and facing the threat and screaming off and then dying off screen. You hear the sounds of somebody dying while the other people are getting away, or you see just someone screaming and dying on screen. You know, like it's just never been about like the calm, resigned scribbling and blood on a window. Not dramatically. Like I feel like more in the vein of Alien, she was pounding to say, let me out or whatever. And then they saw the bloody handprint on the window instead of writing, do not open, you know, like, I don't know. It just seems it's a little off. We've said probably already more than there is to say about this one, I feel like.
Yeah. It does look like, to answer your earlier question, I'm looking at some stills right now and it looks like they do have some of the same logos. Not Weyland Yutani, but like the Colonial Marine logo.
Okay, so Marine logo, interesting. Yeah. Well, I guess we could say we can't see the xenomorphs in these so far. You know,
a tiny, tiny glimpse of a tail.
You get a little tail, yeah, like squiggling around. That's like the cheapest. They bought like a big fishing lure or whatever, you know, and they just like, all right, now somebody stick it on a pole and wave it behind this thing. All right, we'll show a really quick, like, half second shot of that, and okay, we're off. Let's move that around. Let's make a little sound effect of it screeching. They didn't even show it coming out of the dude's stomach, you know, like they have like the off-screen hatching, which is just, you know, just a cop-out, I feel like. It's not suspenseful.
And if you look at, like, if you actually pause and look at the tail, it's very poorly rendered. It doesn't look anything like...
Oh, I thought it was practical. I couldn't even tell.
It could be, but it looks rendered to me, and it just doesn't look right. I don't know. I wasn't expecting, like, too much. I don't know what kind of budget they're working with on these, but on that first one, I was pretty disappointed. And when the second one came around, I wasn't expecting quite as much, but I liked it more.
I did.
I thought Specimen was actually kind of a cool little short. I wish they would have led with that one.
Premise of Specimen. I don't know what the whole Specimen thing is about.
Well,
the word Specimen.
It looks like she... Okay, so she...
She works in a greenhouse.
She works in a greenhouse, and it looks like she's studying probably foreign plants. And so it's a greenhouse that also has the capability of being locked down, because you never know. Like, if you're studying an alien plant, it could have spores that are dangerous in some way. So you got to have lockdown and all these, you know, these different precautions and things. And so
as
they had
alien
these
spores are want to do in
sure.
an alien universe.
but they had these soil samples that the dog was able to sense was not good. Like they're bad samples for some reason.
I see.
That was the reason she wrapped them up in plastic, and there were these, it's like soil samples that came in these gigantic tubs. It was like a lot of soil. So she wrapped these up and contained them. And then she goes about her work, which is basically just, maintaining and cataloging and studying these plants, and then, shenanigans.
So things that I did like about this one
that you did.
Yeah. Things that I did like about this one. Mm-hmm. I liked that it was not, cheap in its shock value, in its shocks or jump scares, because I was just unrelated. I was thinking about this yesterday in terms of scary movies or something, about how stupid it is that jump scares are like that filmmakers are allowed to use musical cues to heighten jump scares, because if you're actually in the situation, it should be scary enough, whatever's leaping out at you. I was thinking of like a shot from Insidious or something like that, like one of the opening scenes of Insidious, where it's just like music hit. And like, if the character was actually just experiencing this shot, it would just be like, oh, there's a face. Huh, that's frightening. But instead it's just like, bah! Like, well, there's a face. It's like, okay, thank you for informing me that this should be scary, instead of just letting me be creeped out by it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or like, so this one, they use jump scares pretty well, I think, by those, I guess moisture releases that are happening in the greenhouse for whatever reason, hydrate.
Can we talk about the fact that anytime there's a power lockdown or like that there's some sort of like emergency lockdown, all the lights go out? Isn't that the time when you'd want more lights?
Yeah, no, that's when like security protocol, let's turn every single light on so that nothing can be not seen. Like,
it makes no sense. It's like, okay, I get it. You have to lock doors for whatever reason. And that's fine.
For some reason, there's a power cut.
Yeah,
it's like a flashing red light, like a pulsing red light is going to be more effective. We really need to communicate that this is a lockdown, not like what's the just like.
And not only can you not see, we're going to like trick you with shadows because this light is flashing or rotating, and also there's a klaxon, so you can't hear anything either.
Yeah, this is just a bad. Like it's the interior decorator of LV-426 or whatever. This dude who just took so many. Like everybody's just calling him on his bullshit, just being like, "Are you sure this is a good idea?" No, trust me, believe in my vision. This will be the greatest lockdown that anyone has ever seen. You'll all be so moved by it.
Yeah,
and you will know it is truly lockdown.
I mean, anything is going to be scarier in the dark, but I don't think it needed to be quite so severe.
Filmmaking purposes, they just had to follow the trope of a lockdown, but like for once in a scary movie, I would like to see a lockdown like Jurassic Park. They cut the power, like the dinosaurs turn the power off, right? Or whatever, or was that Wayne, whatever his name is, was that Newman that turned the power off? I forget. It's been a while since I've seen Jurassic Park.
Me too. It's probably Newman.
We have, I mean, I like this one because tonally it moved around a little bit. Mm. I could have done without the montage with the music. I feel like that would have been more in place in a longer feature film,
But it was a good couple shots. I think you're right. Like it was like a pretty decent chunk of the time of this film, but
right. Also, I want to point out something that also scares me about Star Trek is that for some reason, how far are we? What year is this taking place in? Like,
I don't know where these ones are placed.
2200s. Yet. Where does Alien take place? Like 2100 something?
I can tell you. I can look at my my letterbox here. List where I actually put in all the times for everything in the Alien universe chronology.
Wow. Yeah, no, I'd love to know.
Let's see. Alien? You want Alien itself?
Yeah, just Alien. What year does that take place?
2122.
Okay, so in over about 100 years from today, the music has not evolved.
Well, isn't she listening on like a tape deck?
Yeah, she's listening to. Well, I don't know what she's listening. I don't know how her medium of listening is. It's just some like on ear headphones, like some with, like beats or whatever, But she's also like grooving to something that sounds like a Ting Tings ripoff. I did Shazam the song, and it is a song from today. So maybe she's listening to a golden oldie station for her time, 100-year-old oldie station. But and power to them if they want to be into early 2000s, very early 2000s rock. But Yeah, it's just, it's
well,
funny
to me. They're trying
to
match the aesthetic, right, of the first Alien movie, which did come out in 1979.
Well, why would they play Ting Ting's style music then?
Like, well, just we like, didn't hear any music in Alien. They could have
right,
had the Ting
Tings. Right, that's what I mean. It's just like, well, that's why I bring up Star Trek, is because like every pop culture reference that's made in Star Trek is just like from our era. And it's like Star Trek takes place in whenever, you know, I don't know when Star Trek takes place. I want to say 2200 something, but... But yeah, so nothing has happened in 200 years that they can reference.
It's a popular trope right now. I think Guardians of the Galaxy's had a pretty big impact on how science fiction is working at the moment.
In treating music or whatever?
Yeah,
know, like treating. Well, Guardians of the Galaxy has like a reason for it. Like the main character, all he knows of Earth's music is that mixtape that his mom gave him. Right?
Sure.
So I don't know. It just seems really funny to me that they just... I mean, like, If that's my complaint, what do you do to fix that then? Well, I don't know if you can, because you could use like weird techno music or whatever, but then you have the hacker trope, which is like just the Matrix, you know, like every character in the Matrix is just listening to shitty like club music or whatever. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I like that little scene because you only have so much time to character build in a short film. And I thought it did a really good job of letting us get to know this character. Like, this character has a job that requires her to work overnight, and she's all by herself, so, you know, with the exception of her dog, and she's got
that
her headphones,
Doberman.
And that's all she needs. She seems perfectly happy in her job.
Yep.
She's frustrated with the people above, but otherwise, she likes what she's doing.
And why does the lockdown occur?
There's some sort of breach as a result of the facehugger getting out of the soil bucket.
So there's a facehugger buried in the soil bucket, or is that an egg in that barrel? Like, because when she kind of pops the lid off of it, you see that kind of like, it almost looks like the facehugger was using that bucket as an egg, kind of a pseudo egg.
Yeah, or there could have been an egg in the soil.
Yeah, which is interesting, and would fit with like the whole conspiracy type of Weyland-Yutani or whatever research mm-hmm. companies are doing these experiments.
Depending on when this takes place, this could have taken place not long after Alien Covenant, and that could have been put in the bucket by David.
That dastardly David. So was it LV-426 that this is taking place on?
I don't know.
Title card gives it. I thought it was. Is LV-426? Am I just making that up, or is
no,
that?
No, I think
a planet?
That was the first planet.
Yeah. So I thought it was.
Or maybe that was the aliens planet.
I don't remember. Which aliens?
Aliens.
There's so many aliens. Aliens. Yeah, that's what I was thinking it was going to be. I thought it was going to be the beginning of the infestation on that planet. That's what I imagined this short was going to be. Like, it was going to be the beginning of it. So there's like a nice cat and mouse type thing going on with her chasing the dog around.
Mm-hmm. The dog is like presumably chasing around whatever this thing is, this creature, and turns out being a facehugger, which leads to maybe one of my all-time favorite Alien Universe shots, which is
the
her use of
dripping from the ceiling.
No.
Oh.
It was her use of the shovel.
At the end?
No, like when it jumps down from her, or jumps down from the ceiling at her face, and she just smacks it with a shovel and hits the wall.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Oh, okay.
I love
that.
I
didn't know that.
Usually
they're
blasting them with flamethrowers or whatever, but that was awesome.
Yeah, it's nice to see someone like take matters into their own hands and in not a fantastic way, just to be like very practically like, I'm going to defend myself.
She's very
I think
capable.
They tried to do that in Covenant, didn't when they were trying to the Neomorph, the first Neomorph when it comes out of that person.
Mm.
I feel like there was like a very practical fending off scene before she dies horribly.
Barely. I mean, she tries to shoot it and she misses like a dozen times. I think she kind of clips it once with a shotgun and it just goes, and then it runs away. It wasn't a very good stand. But yeah, I like this one. I think overall it was pretty good. The dog was good. It was a good dog. And that was actually...
He was a good dog.
That was a cool little addition to this short. Overall...
What happens at the end? She kills the facehugger with like a mallet or whatever. A Gallagher. She Gallaghers that thing. And... And then they find the dog. And what's going on with this dog? It's got, like, what's the white stuff? That I associate the white stuff in Alien with the androids, but was it an android dog?
Yeah.
Okay, I get it now. All right.
That's the thing. I was like, oh, man, was this short film produced by A24? Is this an A24 film? Did they kill another damn dog? And they kind of did, but it's an android dog, which was cool. I was like, oh, that's a cool addition to the world. I thought this is interesting, because obviously, like, the dog is sort of a companion type where like a David or one of the older models from the Alien, well, I guess future models. Man, that it gets confusing, doesn't it?
The quality from your Plex server made it really hard to tell what was going on with white fluid.
My Plex server is just fine. It's my internet connection.
I know. I've been begging you for an Ethernet cable. I'm going to send you a 100-foot Ethernet cable for your birthday.
It's going to... It will go, like, under my bed, around a corner, up the stairs, up, like, two flights of stairs, through my office.
Can't it go out the window? Like, can't we just drill a hole in your house?
It would be even further to go outside. It would have to be a very long cable, because they're on opposite ends of the house and then up a floor. Unless I went up a floor through our spare bedroom and then across the hall into my office.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to get my hookup changed. I'm working on it.
Yeah, yeah. So...
If you were to rate these on like a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate these?
1 to 5, okay.
Individually, you know, like the first one obviously was...
With like, what am I... Is like Alien like a 5? Were we considering it?
Sure.
First one I give... Yeah. First one, 2 out of 5 for me, and I would give it like... Can I go decimals on this, or do I have to give it like a hard...
No, you can go decimals.
Okay, I give it like a 3.75 for specimen. Just because I think it did better storytelling and world building.
Yeah.
You know, like, the first, like, I will never get the first shot of Containment out of my head. All these names are so nondescript, and they could be, either one could be the other's name. You know, like, Containment, Containment and Specimen are just, like, two token words in the Alien universe that are
just... You know what the next one's called?
Covenant. Like, I don't know.
Night Shift.
Which is could be any could, of these ones.
Could have been the one we just watched.
The first one could maybe not be Night Shift, but you don't know what side of the planet, or like when the issue happened. Like any of these titles would make sense.
Yeah.
Like,
I would say, like, of the two that we've seen, the second one, Alien Specimen, could have been called Containment. It could have been called Specimen. It could have been called Night Shift. It could have been called Harvest. And it could have been called Alone. All of which are names for different shorts in this series.
An alien is a perfect name because there's one alien in the whole thing, you know, like that's why that's a perfect name. And Aliens 2, Alien 2, Aliens, there's just more than one alien. Great name. Alien 3 is the third one. Yeah. Excellent. Great job, everyone.
So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 4 of these shorts remaining. If they go as I think they will, I think they'll be more or less like what we're seeing, what we've seen so far. I am dying to be surprised. I want something that's like really interesting and something that I would be like, man, I want more of that. You know, it doesn't have to be something where it's like, oh, I could see them drawing that out into a full movie. I just want to meet some characters or an idea that I want to know more of. Cause that's the thing that has always interested me in the Alien universe. It's like, I want to know more about X. So for you, if you were, you know, to write a script for an Alien 40th anniversary short that'd be produced by, you know, some team that would hopefully know what they're doing, what would be in that script that would be interesting to you?
Okay, I'm going to give you my answer if I wanted to stand out in a pitch meeting, and I want to give, and then I'll give you like, I'll try and think of something that's actually interesting to the universe. But if I was trying to pitch a movie that's interesting and different for the Alien universe, I would make a comedy. I would, but not like a straight up stupid comedy. Like, or maybe actually, you know what? Maybe I would just go stupid comedy. I would have like a cook. I would make like, remember Deep Blue Sea? You see that flick?
Hell yeah.
The sharks. Okay. I would make like an LL Cool J type character dealing with the aliens.
Okay.
You know, he's got like a pet monkey or something, a pet bird, some kind of animal companion, and they have to deal with facehuggers in a kitchen setting. You know, part Ratatouille, part Alien, part Deep Blue Sea. I'm selling this thing.
Okay.
Greenlit. Thanks so much, Fox. Okay, but like something actually interesting. I would want to know more about the androids, probably. I think that's probably where I would come from.
Okay.
I would want to know like the manufacturing of an android. I'd want somehow how we got from David to Bishop and... Well, Bishop is just one of the Waylands, right? We find out in Alien 3?
No.
Well, isn't the person who comes to see Ripley?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's at the very end. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a Bishop type.
I forgot about that. I was thinking about that character's return in one of the AVP movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, was he in?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Requiem, though, right?
I don't know. It could have been either one. I think it was the first one. And the idea was like he was the model for the Bishop series.
Well, then who was the guy at the end? I haven't seen Alien 3 since I was like probably 9 or 10.
That's why it's all very confusing. That's why I don't consider AVP canon. Like they introduced some interesting ideas, but it was all just to further mesh the Alien and the Predator worlds.
Yucky.
Yeah.
Which is funny because there was the Aliens. What was the Aliens vs. Predator game that came out where you could play as a Marine, you could play as an alien,
Colonial
or you could
Marines?
Play as... No, it was before that. It was probably 15 years before. I want to say 10 or 15 years before. It was like right around the era of like Half-Life 2 came out. It was like an alien, a Predator, and it was like a...
I think it's just the Aliens vs. Predator game.
Yeah, and you could play as a first-person shooter, play as an alien, play as a Predator, play as a Marine.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, a pretty good integration of all three franchise or all three species.
I always thought that game looked really cool. I never played it though.
I wanted to play it. I've railed against Kingdom Hearts 3, but I like the idea of a story being told from three different perspectives. I don't like the same story being told three times, but I do like seeing it. I mean, like, cause the alien story mode, you start as a facehugger, you have to find a Marine, you impregnate them, and then you become an alien and you just play the rest of the game that way. You should try and find this game.
I'm looking at it right now on Steam.
Ooh.
It's
nice.
Windows only.
Time to get boot camp going.
I know. Well, yeah, I've got like the CD archival project I've been working on is kind of expanding beyond the scope I initially prepared for, in that there are a lot of CDs from the era where I was buying CDs and forming my musical taste, where enhanced CDs were a thing. And enhanced CDs... They worked primarily on PCs, but after a while they made variants that also worked on Macs as well. The problem is, I have updated my Macintosh system to Mojave, which no longer supports the classic environment. So I can't look at any of these things. So basically, I need to either emulate an older version of Mac or an older version of Windows on my Macintosh to see what's actually on these discs.
That's interesting.
Sweet, sweet bonus material.
Okay. What would you pitch for a short?
I like your kitchen idea. I think it would be fun.
I would cast LL Cool J. You know what? He would do it.
I think it would be
fun. I would actually just make that character. I would just transplant him into the alien universe.
LL Cool J or the Deep Blue Sea character?
Yeah, the he's like a preacher of some. I think his name is just Preacher in that show.
Yeah,
in that movie.
Yeah, I watched that fairly recently. Actually, that was my first rated R movie.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's first rated.
Yeah,
it's great.
I played it on TV a lot, TBS. So I kind of have an idea, and this isn't like a super great idea for what would maybe actually be super interesting, but I think it would be fun to have a full-fledged xenomorph on the loose in a zoo. Because it opens you up to all these possibilities. You know, you've got like all of these animals that are creepy enough in their own right. It's dark probably, so they're making all these different noises, all these animalistic noises. You don't know where the xenomorph is at any given time. Plus, you have the opportunity for all those like cool xenomorph variants that you used to be able to buy action figures for.
Did you ever... That was the biggest disappointment in my life because I grew up with those action figures. I got them all. I had the scorpion alien. I had the gorilla alien.
Did you really? Oh,
yep. I had the flying queen. You know, I never had the flying queen. My friend did. But the gorilla alien was cool. You filled its head up with water and you squeezed it and it shot water out of it. My brother had the scorpion alien where you would press a button on its back and it would blow up. There was a lot of cool ones. The bull alien was really cool. You pressed a button and his head shot out. And they were really well designed.
Yeah.
And they never showed up in the movie. Aliens.
They're in the comics.
Right. And that was awesome, though. Like, just those... Oh, man.
Yeah, they were cool. The comic store that I went to the other day, spoiler, all of the comics I picked up are Alien. but they also have a gigantic collection. I think they have one of every single toy from that line.
And oh, yeah.
Nobody touches them. Nobody buys them. But they're all just sitting there, warm in the pegs, and look pretty sweet. But
I got to get those comics. Where can I read those?
I don't know. You're the comic book maven of the two of us.
I'm a Marvel stooge.
Yeah.
I just read Marvel.
They were all, most of them, I think, were Dark Horse.
I was going to say Dark Horse.
Yeah. So
they have an app.
Do they?
Yep, they do.
Oh, cool.
That's where I bought the Buffy collection for 99 cents.
I'm not like a big comic guy, but when I find a series I think looks interesting, I'll generally just get the whole set if I can. You know, I think it probably goes against the, you know, just like the crate picking mentality where you just pick up the first one and if you like it, you go buy another one. But the collector part of me is a little bit stronger. And it also frustrates me because I go to a comic store and they, you know, they've got the original Alien series, which has fantastic artwork. Seriously, just beautiful stuff. And they have issues 1, 2, and 4 of a four-part series.
That's it? They don't...
They were missing issue 3. So it's like, I'm going to have to find that somewhere else. And I'm going to be missing part of it. I don't know. There was a bunch there that I really wanted to dig into, but I grabbed Alien vs. Predator issues 2 and 4 because I already had issue 1. I got most of the original Aliens arc. Then they've got Aliens Earth War, has really cool artwork, and then Aliens Genocide, which is also really cool. I think I got the whole series there.
I bet I can get it all in Dark Horse. I wonder if there's any sales going on.
In any case, I'm excited to actually read some comics. I've got a bunch of Alien comics I'm dying to dig into, and that'll be maybe one of my calm down activities over this very busy summer I'm going to have. I don't know. On these shorts is that there's 4 more of them, and they'll be coming out over the next couple weeks, and hopefully they'll all be coming out in a set. I'm sure they'll put out some kind of DVD or something with some extras, which I'll probably get. They're okay. It's fun. I it's cooler than a lot of IPs will, you know. It's more than most IPs will do for a 40th anniversary of something, you know. Star Wars is an exception because they're gigantic and they stand to make a lot of money, but they didn't have to like go through all the effort of finding these short film creators and creating these things, producing them and putting them out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, like they're making some filmmakers' dreams, you know.
Yeah,
they're giving them, or like, I don't know where the budget came from for these things. I assume 20th paid these filmmakers to make these things. And I think the second one was a female director, which is awesome. They're giving everybody a chance and everybody a shot to make something really cool. And I mean, as you know, much as I was harping on the first one, they're well made for what they are. And you can tell they put some thought into it and some effort. So great job, guys.
Yeah. They're all labors of love, I'm sure. You know, some of them are not going to be to my taste and some of them are probably going to be kind of corny. I'm assuming that there were some time budgets and you can only work with who you find, right? So the actors are, it's what you get.
Yeah. Well, the second actress, I thought she was excellent, but I thought she was also just, she wasn't plain looking enough.
She was very unique.
Yeah, she was like, well, when you sent me the screen cap of that, of the second one, I was like, that looks like a Final Fantasy Spirits Within trailer. You know,
I thought the same thing. I thought, oh, interesting, like an animated short. I wonder what studio worked on this. But no, it's just like a crazy lit still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dang. I'm on darkhorse.com looking at all their digitals.
They had a lot of Alien series. I didn't realize just how many comics there were.
Predator, Judge Dredd, and Aliens versus each other. Yeah. I don't want that. I just want Aliens.
You got to check out the Alien Batman arc, because that's the one I'm going to start first.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It might be a one-shot, actually.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
Aliens.
If you want a hard copy, I think there's one left. I might be able to get it.
No, I don't believe in hard copies anymore.
Okay. Fair enough. Right. Hey, so I meant to ask you this at the top of the show, actually. The other day, you asked me what you should be listening to. Like, what new stuff had come out that you should be listening to? Are you in, like, a discovery mood?
I am. Well, I mean, it's spring, and it's time for renewal, and I have less work on my plate right now.
And there's no Hopalong album coming out this year.
Right, exactly, that we know of. I just needed something new. I was like, I should just be listening to something that came out this year, because I'm going to have nothing when it comes to December. You know, Bazan put out something, I think, in January, might have been December. So, you know, if that's the only thing I've listened to new this year, come next December, then I'm going to have some trouble on our annual Crate Digger.
Oh, is that an annual thing?
Of course it is.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was called Crate Digger 2018.
All right.
Last year, so.
Cool. I look forward to that. What did you find this time around, though?
Nothing.
You found nothing?
I listened to the two that you recommended, and that was it.
And they didn't catch?
No, it was a Japanese house that you recommended, or?
Yeah, man.
It was good. I couldn't get into it too much. I probably should just listen to it more than a couple times, but no, it didn't catch me. And then the other one you showed me, Owls, I think?
Owl.
I mean, it just looks like owls.
It does.
With an extra E. No, that was too a little too overproduced for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
You might like their debut a little bit more.
Yeah.
Having listened to the new album a little bit, like, it's good, but it's... Yeah, I don't think it really stands to at least what I grew most familiar with over the last 6 or 7 years. Okay, that's fine. I was trying to think, like, it's so hard to pitch stuff to you because I never know really what you're gonna dig, and I haven't been listening to a ton of new stuff lately either. So
you're in like archival mode. So I understand.
Yeah, it's crazy. I have so many discs just laying here. I took everything off of the shelf, my one CD shelf, which was already a problem prior to starting this project. But everything is now off the shelf, and it goes on the shelf after I've archived it and added it to my Discogs. And that's just like step one, because I've got this new project that I'm kind of working on in the background where I'm going to be writing about some of the stuff that I find, some of the stuff that I don't really see, you know, documented anywhere else. And so as I'm doing that, I'm going to be pulling these things back off the shelf as I continue to rip CDs and add metadata and catalog and archive and everything. It's super fun. I love doing it. Like it's really interesting to dig into these old catalogs that I and probably nobody else has thought about in a very long time. Like, you're from the greater New York area. Do you remember a label called Dying Wish Records?
No. I'm not not at all. No.
I mean, I don't think many would, like, unless you were a Bayside fan in 2002, then you probably would have never heard this label. But I now own, I'd say, 90% of this record label's catalog, because they only put out like 5 CDs. And it's just fun. It's like, it's fun to dig into this thing and then dig into the Internet Archive and find their old websites and find like more info on these discs and the artists that were on these labels and all the stuff that went on at the very early part of these bands' careers and things. So I don't know. It's a fun nerdy project, and I'm looking forward to actually releasing this thing that I've been working on at some point, hopefully fairly soon, but I'm in no rush. I'm just kind of creating a backlog of decent content and seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's next? We actually have a lot of weird little mini topics today. I want to talk about your haircut. I want to talk about your knee braces. Mm-hmm. And then we've got some podcasting talk. So where do you want to start?
I mean, there's not really, I just got a haircut. That's really it.
All right. Next up.
Yep.
Why are you wearing 2 knee braces? Did they slip?
No, I've been off running for probably close to 3 weeks now. I tried doing it last week for like a really short run, and then like a mile into it, I started feeling the pain again. I have this pain on the outside of my knee, and for the longest time, I thought it was my ITB, the iliotibial band, but it is not that. It is my LCL. I went to an orthopedic, and he did an ultrasound, and I have a bunch of micro tears on my LCL, which explains a lot of the injuries that I've been having for the past few years. And we took some x-rays, and now I'm going back on Thursday, and we're going to make a plan to get better. And so I have, part of the beginning of that plan is to wear a knee brace, and the right leg is worse than the left. It was funny. He was like very surprised, like, oh, you got some give in this leg, huh? It's just like, it's just my leg rotates laterally in a way that it should not rotate, or it moves laterally in a weird way. It's a floppy knee. I think there's a scientific term for it. Yeah. Floppy knee, we call it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man. That sounds rough.
Yeah, the worst is just not being able to run.
Yeah.
Because I just, it's just such a great release for my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it slowly just turns to mush until I do run.
Mm.
And I was really looking forward to running at the beginning of May with my friend Sam. He's coming back from LA and we're meeting in Boston to hang out for like a few days. And he's like, oh, I run now. And I was like, oh, cool. He's like, yeah, I can almost keep up with you. And I'm like, that's really cool. And he's like, we should run around the town that we grew up in. And I was like, that would also be great. And then I ruined both my legs. So.
Oh, man.
I know. It's a bummer.
That is a bummer.
But the doctor, I asked the doctor for like a realistic, you know, like recovery strategy. And he's like, oh, I mean, like if you go to physical therapy, what I recommend like 3 sessions a week, then I think we should be able to, you know, just get you back on your feet in 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Because I took 3 weeks off and it still sucks.
Mm. I mean, with the LCL, is it something that can heal fairly quickly?
I don't know. And he also used the word chronic micro tears or something like that. Mm. Chronic something. And I feel like chronic just means it's always going to be there, doesn't it? Like, so it's just not a, yeah. I don't think I can be fixed.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think I just have to figure out ways to work. And running with this brace on is what he recommends, but I just don't know if I can swing that. Because I run like the wind, and this brace inhibits that.
It's a very strange thing, the human body. The LCL is a very, very tiny piece of the greater makeup of your leg and everything that you use to walk. But when it goes down, it makes things very difficult.
Yeah, it's just like 2 years ago is probably when the injury happened, and I don't know why it happened. But I can't sit still. I can't sit down for too long because of it. I can't run for more than like a mile and a half. I can't run downhill without it flaring up. It just feels like somebody's like taking a knife and slowly just like kind of running it around the back side of my knee.
Mm.
Like not the back, but like the right over my fibula, my tibia meat.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the next 2 weeks of my life is just trying to get better on this before I go up to Boston in May and try and do some nice running around the North Shore.
Hmm. Well, I hope you recover quickly so that you're able to do that running. So yeah, that's rough, man. I know how much you like to run.
Yeah, it's weird though. I think that's why I have so much free time now, and like that's why I'm not as stressed anymore. Is because I'm like not waking up being like, okay, I have to run, and I have to leave Olivia home while I run, and that means I have to prep the couch so she can't jump on it because she's just a little dog and she's going to hurt her back, and. To put the pee pads out in case she decides to just pee on the ground while I'm gone, because she does that sometimes. Like it's just not having to deal with that part of my daily routine it's been liberating, you know. Mm. Like as much as my brain is turning to mush because I'm just not getting the endorphin release that I need, it's almost like a nice vacation.
Is this the reason why you're getting through Patriot so quickly?
No, Patriot I'm watching with Aaron in the evenings. Okay. That is more because I don't have any good one episodes to edit besides these little bonus ones that we're doing now. But that's really it. So yeah, having more time in the evenings is why I'm watching Patriot, because Aaron I think digs it. You know, I don't think she was feeling it at first, but then I think she's gotten into it more and more as they've opened up. Like season two, they really, it's just it's something else.
Yeah.
But I like that they're sort of assembling the Avengers, you know, as you get into it. Like if season one is extremely our character, John Lakeman is very isolated and alone in his works, and then season two he's suddenly surrounded by many people, and I really like that.
It is incredible how many people show up in the city and how little suspicion it draws.
That's everything about this show though. Like all the things that happen, like murders in broad daylight, or like shootings in broad daylight, and It's just the theme of this show. I'm excited to see where it goes at the end of the season, but ultimately knowing that it's not going to be coming back is really, really frustrating.
You know, you say that, and I don't necessarily distrust
I got insider sources on this.
I'm holding out hope that maybe for now the plan is to put it on the shelf, but that maybe at some point it will come back. I think that if this new show that he's working on comes out and it's a hit, that might change their minds.
Do we know where it's coming out on?
I think it's like one of the cable networks.
Okay. Like, is this a USA show?
I don't know. I was thinking like maybe Stars or something.
Oh, okay. I mean, like, Stars is a little bit easier. Party Down was on Stars and everyone loved that. Big Love was
Perpetual
on Stars.
Grace. Let's see. Epics.
Epics. That's, oh, I have a friend that just started working there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, a trailer just came out for this.
Oh, wow. Excited. Should we live watch it right now?
And by just came out, I mean, it came out exactly a month ago.
Okay. So, exciting.
I'm going to send you a Joe Blow link. Is that okay?
What's a Joe Blow link?
You'll know. It's the.
I don't want it. Do just, I not want to know?
It's just that, like, YouTube channel that posts all the trailers, but brands them all with their silly logo.
I'm not getting any of your texts. We've established this.
Oh, that's right. Send it over Skype. What's going on, man?
I don't know.
Are you not getting my actual text messages either?
I just got one from 206 that said, hello, are these not going through?
All right. That's weird. I just sent it to you on iMessage instead.
Got it. Thank you. Perpetual Grace. Maybe we... Just, oh, cool, an ad. All right, I'm watching this later. I'm not watching this now.
Oh, okay.
I'll file it away. But well, yeah, we'll watch it. I hope it's good.
Yeah, me too. I think it will be. Like I mentioned in our conversation the other day, it shares a lot of the same cast as Patriot. Like a lot of favorites from that show will appear in this, as well as Ben Kingsley. So, and Jimmy Simpson. Mm-hmm. I'm stoked.
Who's Jimmy Simpson?
You would recognize him. I swear to God, like I told you about Jimmy Simpson 2 weeks ago that you didn't think to Google him. Says so much about a relationship. He's in Westworld, House of Cards.
Oh yeah. He's Westworld. Okay.
He's like a character actor and everything. I think he used to have like a reoccurring bit on Letterman.
Sunny. He was always on Sunny. He just has like,
yes.
I forget what his name.
He was a writer on Letterman who became a reoccurring character called Lyle the Intern.
Yeah, he's really weird looking.
He's so fun.
Like, he's not unattractive, but he looks like a giant child. He looks like a middle schooler, but older.
Yeah, he's great. So can we talk about this Luminary Love and Radio thing?
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me more about it.
All right. So there is a podcasting platform called... Okay. They're calling themselves a podcasting platform. They're called Luminary.
Oh, it's like the Netflix of podcasts.
Right. It's one of the several that are emerging. Their whole shtick is, yes, you can listen to all your free podcasts here, but also, if you pay us a bunch of money, you can listen to all these exclusive shows that we have for you with people like Guy Raz and... who's the guy from Get Him to the Greek? He's got one.
Russell Brand.
Like they've got all these like big names doing these shows, and all this stuff is like pre-recorded already. It's basically Audible. Like really, if you think about it, it's Audible. It's not podcasts. These are not
sure
premium podcasts because they're not being casted anywhere. But in addition to all the content that they've kind of created for themselves, all this exclusive new stuff, they've also pulled in Love and Radio. So Love and Radio will now no longer be broadcasting their shows on the free channels, you know, the free RSS that you could subscribe to in any app. You now have to subscribe to Luminary for $8 a month to listen to that show, which is super sad because it's one of my all-time
sucks.
Favorite shows.
I know. It's like they're like, all right, Love and Radio is a lot of people's favorite show because it's so, and like, I think part of what makes it a lot of people's favorite show is because it's so fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Their topics are out there. Their production is top-notch and not run-of-the-mill. Mm-hmm. And it also is very limited release. They do like maybe 15 episodes a year, I think.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, And so it's like, I feel like it's like getting The Sopranos for your network or something. It's like something that people love, and it's almost like it's like a cult thing. They're going to get
all. It
would
be like getting The Sopranos if The Sopranos were still making episodes. It's like, we're going to make it so you can only watch new episodes of The Sopranos here on this new Lockaway network. Like, you've got used to watching them on PBS, but now you've got to subscribe to HBO.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, that sucks.
It does suck. I'm not happy about it. And Nick Vanderkolk has talked about this a little bit on Twitter. He's been very silent in the last month, like since the announcement came out. He tried to defend his position on it in saying that, you know, all he wants to do is craft good radio. And he felt that, you know,
then it's
the
not
advertising.
Radio, then.
Yeah, he thinks that the advertising was a distraction from the show. Sure, maybe. But in my opinion, and I, you know, this isn't shared by everybody. I understand that this is going to be something that we're going to have to work out over the next couple of years. Is that I don't mind the advertisements because I understand why they're there. I understand why they're necessary, and they don't bother me. If they're done well, I'll listen to them all the way through. If they're not done well and they're just pretty standard ads, or it's one that I've heard 1,000 times before, I'll skip ahead. They have a skip button for a reason, and I don't feel like that's hurting the show that I'm listening to, because they're getting paid for the listens, the downloads, and maybe they're getting, some of them have like CPM agreements, and that's fine, because when I need to pay for a service, like when there's something that I need, if there was a podcast that I love and I listen to, and one of the brands that they were advertising for was one of the brands that I was thinking about going with anyway, I will use their code. I will use their link. I will remember that I can help out a creator that I liked by going and using their service. Advertising doesn't bother me. What bothers me is having to pay $8 a month. $8 a month. That's more than I pay for Netflix.
For one show.
For one show that I want to listen to. And their argument is going to be, well, we have all these other shows that you're going to grow and love. Guys, I don't need more shows.
Yeah.
All the shows that I need are already available to me, and I can listen to them however I want to. And that's never been a problem. Like, having more to listen to, more premium content, like, that's never been a problem. So, I don't know. I don't see Luminary working out. I don't think that this model is really going to take in the way that Netflix does. It's not the same.
I hope that there are some pirate RSS feeds that pop up.
I know.
I would love it if there's like Love and Radio spelled backwards popping up on the iTunes store.
Radio
or whatever,
and Love.
Yeah, like Radio and Love, and it's just a pirate feed, someone just reposting the Love and Radio podcasts. And I hope that when they squash one, that three more pop up. Like, it just...
Well, I mean, the nice thing about RSS is that these probably wouldn't fly on the Apple network. They'll probably get taken down on their directory, but it doesn't matter, because as long as you have the RSS feed, you can add it to whatever player you want. So yeah, I think it probably will. I think, you know, some person who will pay $8 a month for this service will get industrious and do something to help out his fellow man. But I don't love that. Like, I want Love and Radio to keep making stuff, and I want them to be paid while they're doing it. But I don't want to pay $8 a month to listen to the show, as much as I love it, as much as it challenges me and it makes me think more than any other show that I have ever subscribed to, I can't follow them there, because there's no reason to. There's no other reason than to follow Love and Radio.
I just think I wonder if something happened with Radiotopia. Olivia, come here. Stop. She's whining.
She's a good girl.
She is a good girl. Because, I mean, Radiotopia seems like a pretty sweet deal from the outside. Mm-hmm. Like, Roman Mars founded that thing with the express goal of making sure all his producers are paid and have health insurance. And, like, I don't know what... Do you hear that? She's, like, howling.
No, I can't hear it. Olivia, you gotta say it on mic.
Yeah, I know. Come here. You wanna come podcast with Daddy? There you go. You can be on Daddy's lap. It's weird to say Daddy. I understand that. Okay. All right, don't tell Mom.
I said no podcasting.
Yeah, nope. Don't put that dog on the radio. All right, she's just sitting on my lap now. And she can just hang out here for a little while. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like a pretty good deal to be on Radiotopia, so I don't know what more he could want. Probably more money, I guess. Maybe he wants to do something. It's just frustrating, because it literally is my favorite show. Like, mm-hmm. if I could only have one podcast for the rest of my life, it would be Love and Radio. Mm-hmm. Like, over This American Life. And... yeah, that's just that sucks.
It does suck. I don't know. I'm bummed about it. I don't think it's going to work out well. Like, it depends on what ownership they have over it. I don't understand what their agreements are between the creators and Luminary. Like, does Luminary own the content? If Luminary shuts down in a couple months or gets sold off, can the creators take their content and distribute it in a different way? Because in my opinion, that's even worse. Like, okay, I get it, Nick. You want to try something new. Give it a go. But if it doesn't work out, then all of that time that you spent crafting amazing radio, what was it for? Most of your people didn't get to hear it because they didn't follow you to this paywall. And then it's just gone. Like, it's tied up in some other thing, or it's being distributed by somebody else who does something nasty, and maybe their model is to insert all kinds of different advertisements into your show. I don't understand why somebody who I thought was like so independently minded and like a hero for the public radio craft would go and do this. Cause this isn't radio. It's not podcasting. Yeah,
it is like Fugazi signing a record deal, I feel like.
Yeah. And I guess we're making the selling out argument now, but it's kind of what's happening here. And it's kind of sad because I didn't think that this show of any would do that. I don't see, This American Life does the thing where they put a bunch of stuff behind like their app wall. It's still free, but you have to listen to it in their app, which I think is kind of weird.
Wait, is their app free now? Because I paid like $3 for it years ago, well, or maybe, like $5 for it.
Maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't have it because I just listen to it as it comes out. Like, I don't have a lot of need to dig back into the archives.
Their RSS feed is like maybe one or two episodes at a time, which is fine. Yeah, And all the episodes are free on their website. So they drive traffic to their website and drive traffic to their app, which I think is great. I thought their app got redesigned recently. It's pretty, pretty good. It's got some really nice curated playlists. So like if you're coming into it and just wanting to hear some good radio, like and on a certain topic, you'll find it.
I think like it's weird, but it's also better than what it used to be. Like before podcasting was a thing, you never heard a radio show again unless they did a replay. So the fact that they have any archives at all available anywhere for free is nice. Like that is a benefit. But for this, you're taking a show that is, as you say, made for radio. You're taking it from the radio. You're taking it from the internet equivalent of the radio, which is podcasting, and you're sticking in a jar, and you gotta say, hey,
$8
a month to listen to this damn thing.
Just look at it in terms of like definitions. I mean, like radio is broadband, or it's just like, it's, you can't privatize radio waves really, unless you make them so narrow, but like, it's supposed to be everybody like gets to listen to this. And the cost of entry is just whatever you're listening to it on, like a portable radio, or something. And in our case for podcasts, it's like either a computer or a smartphone. And you could even get like a pretty cheap smartphone now, like that can get some kind of app on there that can download podcasts. Like, it's not a huge cost of entry anymore. And then the content is supposed to be free and the advertisers pay for the content. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of an agreement we've had. And that's what defines a podcast, is it's like this open format for everybody. Mm-hmm. And by making it, behind a paywall, it's not a podcast anymore at that point.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like a, you might as well be like streaming an album or buying an album or something at this point, or like
it's an audio, it's like
music streaming. Yeah.
It's the Audible thing. I mean, there are quote unquote podcasts on Audible, but really like there are audiobooks, and then there are things that are like audiobooks, but were never originally a text, and that's fine. I think that there's a market for that. You could, I would love to listen to an audio drama or something if it was on Audible, and that's what it was intended for. But for Love and Radio specifically, because I have a familiarity with the show and its origins, like, I think that this is just really nasty, and it's weird because, I don't know, $8 a month for 12 months. That's $96 a year. And if you're just going there for Love and Radio, and they're only producing, I mean, are they going to be producing more episodes? I don't think so. I doubt it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be putting in the same amount of time that they used to, and maybe a little bit more. But I think that'll probably just go into the episodes that they plan to create. I don't think that they're going to be putting out, you know, exponentially more episodes than they did when it was on a free feed. I don't know even how, like, they plan to make as much money unless they're just, you know, contractual agreements. But again, that's just going to chip away at Luminary. And eventually, if Luminary runs out of cash, they have a lot of cash. They got like $100 million in venture capital or something. They have a lot of cash to run through now. But they're going to be expected to make money. And are they going to be able to attract enough listeners based on your show and all the other shows that they have available exclusively to keep this thing going in perpetuity? I don't think so, because there are other companies that are also trying to do the same thing. And it's going to get to the point where we're not going to want to pay for Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, HBO, Go, whatever. And then all of these podcast networks? Are you kidding? it's not tenable.
It's just like, it's weird because if you look at Audible and you look at Spotify, those are essentially, they have podcasts and or like audio programs that are behind a paywall.
Mm-hmm.
But those are not like their main export, you know? Like Audible has a wealth of literary titles and books and school books and everything that's on tape.
Yes.
For people, for accessibility issues, for just lifestyle issues, you know? So there's a reason that Audible exists. There's a reason Spotify exists. You know, as much as I hate it, it's just like it's a company that streams music to people and is the main delivery method for music now for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that exists. So it makes sense to include these podcasts behind that paywall because it's another way to get people to listen to more music on your platform.
Yeah, added benefit for the millions of people that are already subscribed to your service.
Exactly. Yeah, and to have a thing that's just podcasts.
Yeah, from the jump. Like, they're just starting out and they expect buy-ins.
Like, they're grossly overestimating the amount of people that listen to podcasts.
I think so. Like. I mean, we could be wrong here. Like, we could be totally wrong. We could easily be in the minority. There may be people who are really interested in all of this exclusive content that Luminary has coming. Like,
no.
I don't know. Like, I think there are some shows on there that, you know, maybe even May would be into. I don't know if they have, like, celebrity chat shows, but they have celebrities that have talk shows, and that's, like, kind of the show that she likes to listen to, and a lot of people do. Dax Shepard's podcast is very, very popular, and he's not going to be on, you know, he's not going to be, like, a Luminary exclusive or anything, but they have all of these people, Hannibal Buress, Russell Brand, they've got some NYC shows. Or WNYC shows, and they're going to get some people. I just don't think that they're going to get enough.
No, I don't think so either. I expect, when does it launch? Do we know?
Yeah, they've moved it up. It launches at the end of this month. I think the 23rd.
I bet they'll drop the price before the end of the year.
You think?
Yeah, I bet they'll cut it in half.
Yeah. Well, they're probably going to start lower because it's going to be like introductory pricing to drum up users, because that's what's going to interest the, you know,
mm-hmm.
their backers. But
yeah,
it's sad. I'm very sad for Love and Radio. I feel like my favorite show has died. They may continue to make stuff, but I'm not going to hear it. That just sucks.
I know. Oh, and it's going to be weird because, like, yeah, BitTorrenting a major studio film or something, sure. But am I going to have to BitTorrent a podcast that I used to get for free and really enjoyed?
Yeah, probably.
And, like,
probably.
I'm sorry that I didn't like any of his advertisers, but I would be lying if I said I'd used any advertiser on any podcast. I just don't buy things in general.
Mm.
And maybe that's the problem with me or, like, podcast listeners, that they're generally cheap people and they feel like they should have things for free.
I mean,
but, like,
it's not,
I don't know.
It's not
entirely
true.
I don't buy that. I don't buy it. But, like, I understand from, like, a capitalist perspective, like, well, we're not making anything from these podcasts. There's like 70% of these people are not buying any of these things or not using coupon codes. Like, you may get 100,000 listens on an episode, but, you know, maybe only a couple hundred people use your coupon code.
Oh. Know it or not, Mike, you do pay Squarespace.
I do.
Yeah, our Bantha Fodder website runs on Squarespace, which you pay part of the cost for, and I used a podcast code to start that subscription.
Oh wow. Well, I mean, I'm paying you.
Yeah, you pay me, I pay them. On the Luminary page for Love and Radio, they have, you know, some poll quotes about the show, and the quotes are from Ira Glass and from Jad at Radiolab. I would love to hear their take on this. Like, I can't imagine that they're super thrilled with Nick pulling this thing into Luminary.
I wonder. I bet they were approached, and I bet they vehemently denied.
Oh yeah. Well, NPR, the NPR shows kind of have their own thing going on. They bought Pocket Cast, right? So they've kind of got their own thing going, which I think is still weird. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there, but so far nothing has come across my radar that seems
wrong. It just happened. We don't really know what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's just like a, I mean, those shows also, like, I feel like I hear Jad asking for money almost every episode of Radiolab or More Perfect or whatever. So they rely a lot on listener donations, like probably almost exclusively, and like whatever small grants that they can get to run their business. But like, yeah, I don't know. I believe that Jad sees the value in public information and public podcasts. And Ira Glass, This American Life, they have this rocket mortgage every single episode.
And Lagunitas.
Lagunitas, yeah.
I love that one. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Putting the pub back in public radio.
I don't hate their ads because they're not super long. They're really short.
I mean, it's a sentence here or two. Like the Lagunitas ad is literally one word at the end. Like, how much is Lagunitas paying This American Life
to be featured? Works, though. It works. The other day, Chris Enns, who does a bunch of podcast editing, he tweeted something like an article about how beer manufacturers are getting into the podcasting business with their ads. And he's like, I've never heard a beer advertisement. And I replied, I'm like, I can't not associate Lagunitas with This American Life now. Like, it's the keeping the pub in public radio is in my brain. And I think about it every time I see Lagunitas at the store at a venue. And he's like, oh man, that's right. Like, he's definitely heard it too. Maybe he doesn't listen to This American Life as much as I do, but I think it works. You don't need to have long one as long as your thing
is super
catchy.
It's like a reverse advertisement. It's like when you see that Lagunitas, you think about This American Life. You're like, I should listen to that. And when you listen to This American Life, you're like, I should have a Lagunitas. It's like a symbiotic relationship that they've got.
Who was it who had, they had a Sam Adams thing for a while. Was it Heavyweight? Or maybe it's This American Life?
No, it was Sam Adams. It was because I feel like I heard, what's his name?
It was one of the two. I think it was probably Heavyweight.
Jonathan
Goldstein.
Goldstein talking about hops or something like that.
He did that, and then he had the Fire and Cane.
He had the whiskey?
Yeah, that whiskey.
Well, he had Honda Civic or whatever for a while. Like,
yeah, he did.
Advertising on Heavyweight, like... It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
And his ads, I would listen to every single one of his
Me
ads
too.
Because they were so good.
Him and Jorge.
He had great ad reads. Him and Jorge were great. Have you been following the Not Nikwa podcast or that Twitter feed?
I added it to my podcast list on Twitter, but I haven't read through that list in a while.
I don't think they've tweeted recently. Mm-hmm. And they did they said that Vulture was about to out them. So they said they came out and it was Jorge Just.
Was it Jorge Just?
I don't know. I can't tell. Because then he retweeted something from Jorge Just where it said, Not Nikwa favorited 92 of your posts. And it was like, and Jorge Just tweets that, well, this is ominous. And then it came out later. And then Not Nikwa tweets something, you know, like, I couldn't tell if they were serious or something. Like, so I guess everyone, like, they're going to journalistically dox me at Vulture, so I just want to get ahead of the curve here. I am not Nikwa. I am Jorge Just.
If it was Jorge Just, that's pretty funny. If it's not Jorge Just, I think it's even funnier.
Well, he's shitting all over. I mean, they shit on Gimlet a lot.
Yeah.
Any listeners who's not familiar with what we're talking about, there's a Twitter account that rose up in the last month or so, I guess, less than a month, probably, called Not Nikwa. Nikwa is, I think, the podcast writer, person, editor at Vulture, I want to say.
He does his newsletter, Hot Pod, which is it's famous for being very detailed and very long. It's a very long newsletter, and he writes two of them because there's the free one, and then there's a subscriber version which goes even longer. But yeah, he hosted an event in like a hot pod summit in New York a couple weeks ago. You should have gone, man. You gotta get a ticket to that next year. There's a lot of
I
cool
don't
people
like
there.
Being around other people who like what I like. I like to be alone and liking what I'm like. I don't want to be around. I can't say anymore, else I'll be like blacklisted forever. But yeah, so this Twitter account popped up called Not Nick Qua. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone just thought it was Nick Qua for a while, and it was not Nick Qua, as the Twitter name professed. And people are like, some people love it, some people hated it. I have one acquaintance friend, old friend, I guess, who I used to play music with, who's now into podcasting. He's a pretty prominent figure in the New York podcasting scene. And he was just like, made a Facebook post that totally Streisand affected it, because I never would have heard of Not Nick Qua if he hadn't made a Facebook post being like, don't pay attention to Not Nick Qua, it's just a troll, and like just shitting on it and thinking it was stupid. Because I think somebody accused him of being Not Nick Qua.
I would have never heard about it unless you told me
and
about
That's the thing, is like I was one of the people, like you either look at it and you think it sucks and you're offended by it, or you look at it and you're like, this is pretty funny. I like poking fun at podcasts and like the bullshit of the industry or whatever. And this Twitter account specifically was, to me, very funny, because I resent a lot of aspects of the podcasting industry in New York City. Namely, that they won't let me in, motherfuckers. but I understand. It's a very exclusive club, and it's hard to get into, especially if you're an old man like me. Anyway, Nick Qua, the Not Nick Qua account is interesting, but I think it's been pretty quiet for the past few days.
Yeah, the bio now says feedback passed away peacefully on 4/4/19. So just this past week, they shut it down.
R.I.P. Maybe it really was Jorge Just.
Maybe it was. It's kind of funny. Unfortunate. There are some good tweets in here, that's for sure.
Who else has really good ads in podcasting?
I mean, heavyweights are just such a step above everybody else. This American Life, because they're short and they're memorable. I think Merlin Mann does a really fantastic job, because he just puts a lot of energy into them and he has a lot of fun with them. Sometimes too much fun. he like sticks to the copy, but sometimes he can't help but laugh at the copy. So, he breaks, and that's pretty funny. Some people really like the Pod Save America ads, because they don't shy from shitting on the ad copy, because they're copywriters, they're speech writers, like their jobs have always entailed writing things to sell people on stuff.
Right.
And so part of their bit is that they shit on ZipRecruiter and Quip and like whoever, Tommy John. But these brands love it. They keep going back. So it works.
Well, because they're probably getting people using their coupons. They don't care what. You could just be shitting all over the brand.
Yeah. Well, some of them are super uptight. I can't think of a specific example, but there's one that Merlin gets on Roderick on the Line that is sort of a problem for him, because they won't allow you to put an ad anywhere into the podcast within 30 seconds on either side of a cuss word. If you swear, you have to wait more than 30 seconds before you use their ad. They don't want their ad associated with cuss words or something. I don't know. It's a very weird rule. But it's hard, because they'll be like getting close to the point of the episode where there should be an ad break. And then usually John will let it slip, and he'll say something, either a cuss word or something that is also in like their terms. He's like, well, we got to go for another 5 minutes or something. But those are good.
That's hilarious.
What about you? Are there any like other shows that really nail it on the ad reads?
I think when We Hate Movies isn't a rerun, because like sometimes they'll have to replay one of their ads. Mm. If they're like even their live date ads, like if they're plugging like their tour that's coming up or a show that they're doing, a one-off, they're always just so funny. They'll just like, I mean, again, it's probably an insider's thing, like if you know them and you're familiar with their inside jokes, it'll be a lot funnier.
Yeah.
But just like hearing them riff on something, you know, they usually don't follow the copy. Like one of them will read the copy and the other ones, the other three will just chime in on it. So they have good ad reads. I remember when Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood was still on HeadGum, they had pretty good ad reads, because it was just three comics. Like they're just three improv comic actors who were just really good at riffing and knew each other's senses of humor. and they didn't have a lot of inside jokes that they would use in them, but they would kind of just have a nice approach to it, whether it was like riffing a song or something like that, or like doing a weird cartoon voice because one of them does voice acting. Like, it's just, they were pretty good at it. I think you just know, like, the ones that you hate and just don't want to listen to, mm-hmm. which is like Marin. Like, I don't want to, I've never listened to a Marin ad. 100% skipped. Because it's the same one every time, and it's just a...
It's stamps.com. They bought him out for, like, time, 4 years.
Yeah, Squarespace. And, like, I'm glad he's making money from it. And I'm, yeah. With his listener base, you know, million downloads a show or whatever, you know, he's got to be fine.
Like, he's doing okay.
They're doing okay because of him. Like, with a million listeners or something, I don't even know what his numbers are. I'm assuming that's more than a million. But if you have a million people listening, you're going to get a thousand or so using coupon codes and subscribing or whatever every episode. So there you go. The odds are in his favor. They don't care if his ad reads suck. And they're not even that enticing. Like, it's, yeah, I don't know.
But remember them. You remember his ads. Like, you remember, at least who they are.
How annoying they are. Yeah, I guess they've kind of pounded into my brain. So I guess mission accomplished, stamps.com.
Back in the day.
Bastards.
My brother and me used to do ad reads for a company called extremerestraints.com, which is exactly what you think it is.
That's amazing.
They were the best ads. I'll put a clip in here from one of them because they're just so goddamn funny.
I want to tell you about our last advertiser, extremerestraints.com. It is a diverse retailer.
All right.
With a variety of goods that seemed to have no discernible theme.
Nope. It's a general store, then, you would say.
It's something of a general store. I'm looking at one thing here, and it looks like... Have you ever, like, been carrying a candle around and thought, like, this takes up a whole hand, and I need two hands to do some things? It looks like here they have a belt that you can wear that you can hold the candle on the belt, and then you have two free hands.
I think
that's impressive.
I think I understand. You know how sometimes you're at home, you just got back from the grocery store, and you get out the kielbasas that you bought at the grocery store, and you think, man, these sure looked bigger at the grocery store. And then you get them out, and you find them unsatisfyingly small, and you think, sure, these aren't going to keep me, these aren't going to fill me up. They have a special, I'll call it a peripheral, and it is a pump. And you put the kielbasa inside it, and if you, and then all of a sudden your kielbasa... The kielbasa that you bought for eating is bigger.
Have you ever said something you didn't mean to someone and you think, me and my big mouth. When am I gonna learn to keep my big mouth shut? Well, what if you could put a ball in there all the time that you can't take out at all?
And it's pretty funny because, you know, it's a great gag gift because everyone's always walking dogs, but nobody ever puts the leash on a person.
And you know what else
makes one extreme restraints?
You know what else makes a great gag gift?
Yeah.
A gag.
Well, imagine this, that you're trying to get to work, right? But you're late and you need to take the carpool lane. But you're by yourself and you got no one to carpool with you. But then you reach in the trunk and you inflate yourself a friend. And you pop them into your passenger seat.
Carpool buddy. That's at extremerestraints.com. You ever look at really skinny cucumber and thought, I bet I could juice that? Extremerestraints.com has got you covered.
Man, it's such a perfect pairing. Like, they needed something. They always would riff on their ads, and usually, like, it'd be very little riffs because they just had to get, like, the point across. But with Extreme Restraints, they were allowed to do whatever they wanted. And then after a couple weeks went by and Extreme Restraints was actually getting sales from a Bim Bam, they would start sending the brothers a list of the items that were bought using their code.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So then they would be able to talk about specific items that their fans were actually using in the bedroom. So good. They're so funny. I'm like listening through the Bim Bam back catalog now, and I'm not looking forward to getting to the point where they stop doing these ad reads because I look forward to the Menu Zone every single episode now. It's so good.
Just as long as you're funny about it and recognize how stupid an ad is.
Yeah, I mean, it helps if, like, you have a little leeway with your advertiser. Some of them are a little more uptight than others, but if they give you a little room to play, They can be they can be fun rather than a chore, and that's better for both.
I was informed recently by someone at HeadGum that sometimes advertisers don't like music playing in the background of podcast of ads.
Mm.
So that's funny, because Good One, we had no music for the first few episodes that I was doing, and I got fed up with it because I thought it sounded so awkward and hollow, because he's always recording in a bad space. And so I adapted the theme song for like some goofy, like Gimlet-esque ad music, and I thought it filled it much better. And I haven't gotten any feedback specifically on that, but now I'm curious to know if that's something. I mean, we don't have any regular advertisers, so maybe that's why. But yeah, I don't know. And now we're doing dynamic inserts. Not for Good One, for some other shows that I'm working on. And they're fine, I guess.
Hmm.
We're not I'm in control of them. Like, they're all host reads.
Right. I was going to ask, does Jesse do all of yours?
Jesse does all his ad reads, yeah. And then for the other ad, I'm doing the hosts do reads as well. So, like, it's a dynamic insert, but we're just, it's the girls doing it. So, like, it's fine. Like, it's not like a weird, like, the mix and the master should sound same loudness, because I'm the one who's bringing it to loudness standards. So it's not going to be like super loud or super quiet versus the rest of the show. The audio will definitely sound different, because some of them are recorded in LA, some of them are recorded here. So, like, that is kind of a bummer for inconsistency's sake.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's once we start having outside ads, if they ever do that, I just don't think those perform as well. I think they're really obnoxious. Like, who does it? Starburns does dynamic inserts from random ass companies, and like whoever, you know, their distributor chooses based on demographics and IP addresses and things like that. And that's sketchy and weird, and I don't like it. And it sounds inconsistent.
The Starburns, there's so much to talk about on the whole, like, the history of Starburns audio, Feral audio, that's all been so nasty. Like, there's just been so much weird stuff going on with all of that makes sense to me. But I really only listen to the Harmontown podcast, and all of their ads are done by their people.
Well, I do like that. Have you heard the new bumpers now for Starburns? It was a "It's a good show," right? You know, like that one, but they replaced that now, and it's just like this weird robotic, like, Starburns audio, and then some, like, a woman goes, "A podcast," "a podcast network."
Yeah,
like,
I heard that in the last episode.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's way better. I like that way better now.
Oh, really?
It was a nice stinger. Yeah, "It's a good show" was like, I had no idea what I was hearing. I knew I saw it at the end of, like, I think that's just, what's his name's thing that he put at the end of TV shows, too. What show did I used to watch? Not Comedy Bang Bang, but, like, there was a show that would end with "It's a good show."
Yeah, I mean, it's produced by Starburns. Like, Starburns is not just an audio company. They also...
I know, but that's why I think it was, like... That's why I was annoyed by it, is because I'm like, I know this from somewhere, and I didn't know what it was at. I didn't even know what "It's a good show" was. Like, I couldn't associate visually. I saw a chef, you know, holding his fingers up in the air, but I couldn't say... I didn't know it was Starburns. It was just like, it was bad audio branding. Maybe visually, like, production credits at the end, like some bad Hat Harry. Like, that was a great thing at the end of House all the time, remember? Like, that's some bad Hat Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that was nice, like, visual, and with a sound effect branding. Remember the end of Maniac? Annie, I'm a hawk. Like,
I don't remember that. I remember...
You never made it to the end of the Maniac credits then, because they would use a clip of Jonah Hill yelling, "Annie, I'm a hawk," which... comes later on in, like, the end of the series. So it's weird. You're like, the whole, if you watch front to end of these episodes of Maniac on Netflix, then you would be getting a clip from the end of the series, which is just weird. And then there, yeah, I mean, but "It's a good show" when you have no idea what Starburns is, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I guess so. You're probably right. I don't know. As a person who's watched, like, a lot of Dan Harmon stuff, I was familiar with it, but I could see how most people would be like, yeah, what is that even?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not exciting.
So Good One is basically kind of dried up for the season?
Yeah, I mean, our last break between seasons was not long. It was maybe like 2 or 3 weeks. Mm. Like, they started it, like, we closed around December and started back up again like January 7th. So there was really no break, and now we have at least like a month or two off, which is going to be nice. And we have two little bonus episodes from live shows that Jesse did. Jesus, what the hell was that? It's a loud truck. That had to be like a few blocks away too.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, sounded like a organ in the background. So Good One's good. Have a couple weekly shows that don't require much editing at all, more than I'd like, but not much.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be quiet for a second.
Yeah. Well, Breaking Ground got delayed.
Really?
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed about it.
What happened?
Well, I published a teaser episode, which if you're interested enough, I'm sure you could find. And I made sure that it was like put through to Spotify, and we submitted it to Apple. And Apple is just so they're inconsistent, to say the least.
What happened?
I've published shows, like this show, got submitted and reviewed in, I think, 24 hours, less than 24 hours. And I've had other shows that you submit and they get accepted within like 2 or 3 days, which I think is probably totally fine. I submitted this show like a week ago and it still hasn't been reviewed by Apple. And we're waiting for it to go live on Apple, because that's where, it, you know, from Apple, it gets disseminated to pretty much everybody but Breaker and Spotify. So we're waiting on that. Otherwise, everything's like ready to go. I've got like a blog post that's like sitting there. It's just waiting for Apple to give us the go ahead. And actually last night I went to bed pretty late, and I was like about to get into bed, and I realized, oh no, I have the first episode of the podcast set to go out tomorrow, but we're not ready to go out tomorrow. So I had to go back upstairs and I had to reschedule the first episode of the podcast. It's kind of a drag, but it's fine. At this point,
do you suspect foul play?
I don't think so.
They're like, oh, Breaker's a competitor to Apple Podcasts, so
No.
We're just going to mess with them.
I don't think so. I don't think it's anything sinister. I think it just the podcast reviewing has taken a back seat this week for whatever reason. It's fine. It'll go out soon enough. I think we're probably going to record another new episode this week, so we'll have a bunch of content to put out whenever we're ready to go. Launching is... it's such not a big deal. Like, you can launch whenever you want to, really. Like, whenever you feel like you're ready. That we took forever to do it for this show. If we had to wait a little bit longer for Breaking Ground, that's fine. I already have 3 episodes in the can. I've got tape that I'm hoping I can craft into another 2 episodes. I'm not looking forward to editing them. I've been putting it off because the last one was particularly rough with the crosstalk. So, we'll see. I'm excited
sometimes
to get new
you just
tape.
Sometimes you just gotta let it ride, man.
I know.
You just gotta let that. Just gotta not strip silence and just let it be.
Oh yeah, no, I have not been stripping silence. It's so hard to do though. Like I was gonna re-record my audio for the third one, like I did for the second one, because I had to for the second one. There was just no other option.
Podcast behind the scenes here.
For the third one, I wanted to do the same thing, but I just couldn't do it because I can't. You can't match the crosstalk. So when a little bit of your audio is caught in the other person's mic, you can't replicate that. And you can't mix the new audio with your old audio, because that's just going to sound wrong and not edited. It would just sound too choppy. So I did what I could. I think it actually came out pretty good, you know, considering the first time that I sat down and started doing it, I was just like pulling my hair out thinking, man, this is the worst thing I've ever had to edit. It's just so tedious. You got to drill down to the itsy bitsy teeny tiny wave set level so that you can chop it at just the right point so you don't get like a weird harsh cut on a certain line when it switches over to the other channel, and you got to pull things in a little bit tighter to mask certain things where you can, where there isn't crosstalk, and it's so much more work. So I'm hoping that going forward we can get some better audio. I sent some recommendations to the team. Hopefully and maybe at least one of them can pick up some fairly cheap but decent sounding gear. I actually recommended the 57 based on...
well, you need an interface.
Well, yeah, I suggested that too. But I mean, mic-wise, like I...
oh, yeah, yeah.
I read a little bit more about the 57, listened to some samples and things, and it sounds pretty good.
The podcastage video review between the SM7, SM58, and SM57 were really good.
Yeah.
That was a nice...
yeah, I watched that one.
Made my mind up for the 57.
Anytime I'm looking for one, though, I always get Aaron Dowd. I'm always like, I need this specific comparison. And it's either like that one guy who you just mentioned, or Aaron Dowd. And then Aaron Dowd always has like my exact setup set up. Like he uses my microphone, he uses my arm, he uses the same software. It's hilarious. In the last one that I watched to compare like the 58, the 57, and something else, he was even wearing a t-shirt that I own. I'm like, this is getting a little weird, man.
That is weird and surreal. Yeah. Are you Aaron Dowd?
I don't know.